So welcome back to this afternoon session where we have a series of speakers that I think will interest you as much as those of this morning. And the first one is Cédric Blampin from the Université Libre de Bruxelles. And Cédric is also a professor invité. So he will give actually a series of four lectures in the fall. Cédric is an MD by training, and he was telling us yesterday over dinner how much the last duties on médecine de réanimation were so hard to him. Then he went into science. He went on a postdoc at Alan Fuchs' lab in New York. He established his own lab exactly 10 years ago, and his lab has been tremendously successful in several fields, actually, of stem cells in development. And we'll be talking today about cardiac development, but also the relationship between stem cells and cancer, and finally, more recently, about cancer stem cells. So today, he will talk about cardiac progenitors. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Hugues, for the kind introduction and the nice and the invitation. So, as Hugues told you, so I will be talking about several aspects of stem cell and developmental biology. And the first one that I would like to discuss with you today, it's about cardiac development and how cardiac progenitors arise during development and how they choose to become a cardiac progenitor and how they choose between different fate. And so I'm sure you are familiar with this diagram. It's called a Waddington diagram, and which represent the states of let's say pluripotent cells here, in which all cells of the embryo, the epiblast cells, can adopt all the cell lineage possible during differentiation. And I would like today I will discuss with you what make the pluripotent cells or the epiblast cells to become mesoderm, and how, once you are a mesodermal cell, you choose to be a cardiovascular progenitor, and in this cardiovascular progenitor, how you choose to become to choose between the different cell fate of the cardiovascular progenitor, namely the myocardium, so the contractile cells of the heart, the endocardium, so the endothelial cells, but as well as the epicardium and the smooth muscle cells. And so heart, the origin of heart, you know, it's the origin is very, very, very early during the phylogeny of animals. And as soon as you are, you know, a multicellular organs, you had the animals had developed a very simple kind of heart, which is at the beginning a peristaltic pump that exists even in invertebrates. And now in humans, as well as in reptiles and birds, we have a four-chamber heart system. And so, in other words, you have the left ventricle that ejects the oxygenated blood flow into the circulation, and this blood flow, deoxygenated blood flow, come back into the right atrium, go to the right ventricles, go into the lung where they get reoxygenated and come back to the left atrium, where another cycle of oxygenation and ejection can take place. And despite this very different morphology during evolution, the molecular mechanism that specify heart cells has been extremely conserved throughout evolution. In flies, most of the key genes that regulate cardiac development in flies are important and has been conserved into mammalian cells. And for example, Tidman is the equivalent of NKX transcription factor. Panier is the equivalent of GATA transcription factor, and so on and so forth. And I'm going to discuss with you how this circuit has evolved in mammals and how, you know, the redundancy has changed and how you choose the identity of cardiovascular cells. And so in mice, the cardiovascular development begins at the early step of gastrulation, and the cells leave the primitive streak and migrate toward the anterolateral part of the embryo, which they will form the so-called cardiac crescent. And so, due to the addition of another layer of cells coming from the pharyngeal mesoderm, the heart is forming, and then following cellular rearrangement, it will lead to a four chambers heart, as I just showed you, left ventricle, right ventricles, and the two atria. In addition to have cardiomyocyte, as I told you, the heart is formed by different cell types. So the cardiomyocyte, the endocardium, so it's the vascular cells that surrounding the inner cells of the heart. That's why I call always cardiovascular, for vascular for actually the endothelium. You have the epicardium, which is the external membrane, and you have also smooth cells. And a beautiful and pioneer paper came from the laboratory of Margaret Buckingham here in Paris. Together with Siegel and Milak, they found that the heart, the different heart regions are arising from different type of progenitor. And using a technique that they call retrospective lineage tracing, Siegel and Milak and Margaret Buckingham had proposed that first the left ventricle arise, which they call that the first heart field or first lineage, and then the right ventricle and the outflow tract region, the beginning of the great vessel, arise from a second cardiovascular lineage that they call the second heart field. And few years later, the group of Gordon Keller identify and isolate using a reporter gene expressing GFP under the regulatory region of Brachyury, a mesodermal gene, and FLIC1, so the receptor for VEGFR2 receptor, they could show that the first cell that arise during embryonic stem cell differentiation as well as embryonic development in vivo were the hemogenic cells, which makes all the blood lineage, and rapidly followed by the emergence of the cardiac cell lineage. And then in the same year, two other groups has found using two different reporter systems, one using IL-1 and the other using NKX2.5 GFP, that there's different progenitors that are seems to act downstream of this Brachyury FLIC1 progenitor. And when I start my own lab, Antoine Bondu, who was at that time a young cardiologist and a graduate student, who really wants to identify the earliest step that leads to two different waves of cardiovascular progenitors, and want to isolate those cells and demonstrate what is the molecular determinant that fit the mesoderm into this particular progenitor, cardiovascular progenitor. And we rapidly decide to focus on one gene that you're going to hear a lot and throughout the rest of my talk, which is called MESP1, so for mesodermal posterior 1. It's a basic helix loop transcription factor that were known to be expressed at the early step of gastrulation and rapidly fade away, and so its expression is very transient. So somehow, you know, during one day during embryonic development, at the time where we knew that the cardiac cells would arise from the primitive streak and migrate toward the anterolateral pole of the embryo. In addition, lineage tracing experiment that has been performed in the lab of Yumiko Saga in Japan has shown that all cardiac cells arise, so the first and the second heart field, they arise from MESP1 expressing cells. And by lineage tracing, we also knew that all cardiac cells, including cardiomyocyte, endocardial cells, epicardial cells, and smooth muscle cells here, and conductive system cells, they all arise from this MESP1 expressing cell. So MESP1 is really at the heart of heart specification and mark all cell lineage and all region of the heart. But when people has tried to see whether MESP1 was just a marker or whether it was a key player in cardiac specification and differentiation, people were a bit, you know, disappointed, because when you make a mouse that in which MESP1 has been deleted, It doesn't result in the absence of heart formation. The heart is very messed up and present very severe cardiac abnormalities that lead to embryonic lethality. But nevertheless, you stain that, the cardiac cells are there. And so then it led the group of Yumiko Saga to hypothesize that its closest homologue, which is called MESP2, and which is located, you know, a few hundred kb, a few dozen of kb downstream of MESP1, was redundant to the MESP1 function. And so that's why she generated a double knockout, MESP1 and MESP2. But the double knockout, MESP1 and MESP2, has even more severe malformation, and no mesodermal cells ever get out of the primitive tree. So it was still, you know, an open question to which extent MESP1 and MESP2 were important for cardiogenesis, and if so, how they would act. And so Antoine decided to tackle this question using embryonic stem cell differentiation as a model. And so when you take embryonic stem cells and you plate them in vitro as a form of embryonic bodies and you let them differentiate, you remove all the factors that maintain the embryonic stem cell in their pluripotent state, you remove leaf and all the goodies that they need, you always see that some cells within your dish begin to beat like cardiomyocyte. And if you stain those embryonic bodies with cardiac markers, they all would differentiate partially, so between 2 to 5%, depending on the culture condition, would differentiate into the cardiomyocyte. But when we, we engineer a new system in which we can, using doxycycline, inducible system in which we can overexpress transiently MESP1. And when we do that, and here by just giving 2 days of dox, we realize that the whole dish was beating. And it was a very, you know, spectacular thing. You know, instead of having this little area that beating here, the whole embryonic body was beating. And all and every single embryonic body was beating. And so we knew since the early beginning that we hit something important. Here's the acceleration of cardiac differentiation. When we stain for troponin T here, an embryonic body that has been stimulated with MESP1, as you can see here, all the cells, the cardiomyocyte surrounding the embryonic bodies were troponin T positive, whereas, you know, few cells only were troponin T positive in the control situation. And not only MESP1 promote cardiac differentiation, it also promotes vascular differentiation, as shown here by V. Kaderin. We next want to know whether MESP1 was promoting cardiogenesis through a cellular autonomous or cellular non-autonomous mechanism. And a very simple experiment that we decided to perform here was the following. So we had our MESP1 expressing cells had an IRS GFP. So we can see by fax or in the plate which cell had expressed the transcription factor. And what we did here, we mixed the control cells expressing a dox-inducible tomato cell or DS red cells here. And simply look, when we did chimeric embryonic bodies, if the red cells, just by being next to a MESP1 expressing cells, can become to differentiate into a cardiomyocyte. And the answer was no, clearly. All the effect was cellular autonomous, and the red cell did not differentiate it further into cardiomyocyte. And the group of Yumiko Saga has somehow shown that in vivo, when she mixes MESP1, MESP2 double knockout cells, labeled here in blue by LAC-Z, and make a chimeric mouse with not wild-type cells. And when she did that, despite the heavy dichimerism of this mouse, as you can see here, the whole mouse is blue, all cardiac cells were devoid of blue cells, showing that you really need MESP1, MESP2 function to make a heart, both in vitro and in vitro as well. Then we wanted to still understand what was the molecular mechanism for that. And so we decided to do a microarray analysis of 24 hours following MESP1 overexpression. And when you take the upregulated gene, you ask, using the gene ontology, what are, you know, the gene family in which this gene are falling into. And the cluster 1 is morphogenesis and development, which is good. Cluster 2, tube morphogenesis and vessel development, very good. And then you have, you know, cell migration and transcriptional regulation. So that, you know, was very encouraging. And when we looked precisely at what are the genes here that are specifically regulated, there was a huge amount of transcription factor. Many of them were very well known to be essential and belong to this core of transcription factor that has been so well conserved throughout the evolution. And in addition to found all these cardiovascular genes being upregulated by MSP1, we found also there's a bunch of factors that were marker of early primitive streak of endodermal cells that were repressed. And I will show you in a second what that means. So what I just show you here is somehow MSP1 seems to act upstream of many of these key and well-known transcriptional regulators that promote cardiovascular differentiation. Then we did a ChIP-seq. At the time, we did ChIP-PCR, but it doesn't matter here. It's just even more beautiful here by ChIP-seq. And you see that actually MSP1, the ChIP-seq is just looking where MSP1 is binding to the regulatory and where it's binding to the regulatory region of all these canonical, classical cardiovascular transcription factor. And here you see beautiful peak in the promoter and enhancer region of myocardium. Here you have in GATA4, here you have other, you know, in GATA6, and I can show you, you know, hundreds of those beautiful images showing that MSP1 really act as a key factor to promote the expression of this gene. When we published this paper in Cell Stem Cell back in 2008, there was a competing paper or accompanying paper that somehow, you know, found mostly the same message than us. And in addition, they even show in that particular paper that myocardium was a key transcription factor to promote cardiovascular differentiation, because when they overexpress a dominant negative version of myocardium together with MSP1, MSP1 can no longer promote cardiac fate, really showing the importance of that. And as I told you, in addition, it was interesting to notice that some transcription factors that mediate alternative fate at that time of development were rapidly repressed following MSP1 expression. I'm not going to show you that, but many of these transcription factors were also direct target gene of MSP1. And so what we propose here is MSP1 really act as a master regulator of cardiovascular progenitor by directly promoting the expression of the key transcription factor that mediate cardiac development, and at the same time to repress all the other fate that can arise at that time to ensure the unidirectionality of the cell fate decision that is taking place at this time. So then, you know, all this was interesting, but, you know, was gain of function experiment. And so, you know, you can always say, well, you know, when you overexpress a gene, what really tell us? And so it was important to look that in another manner. And so we decided to isolate progenitor of cardiovascular progenitor during embryonic during ES cell differentiation, and I will show you after during embryonic development, using a reporter cell line which express GFP under the regulatory region of MSP1. And as you see here, it's an embryonic body, and in green is the 1 or 2% of the 2-3% of the cells that express MSP1 during embryonic bodies differentiation. And when we isolate these cells and when we played them in vitro, it was spectacular to see that all beating cells, they arise always from the MSP1 GFP fraction, and the MSP1 GFP negative fraction is not that I don't play the movie. It's nothing happening in this movie, and they are not beating, whereas here the plate is full of beating cardiomyocytes. Then we saw that the next important question was to try to see whether those MSP1 cells were what we call multipotent in our jargon. So what does multipotency mean? Multipotency means that a cell at the single cell level can differentiate in more than one lineage. And here, in particular, we were looking whether a single MSP1 cell could differentiate at the single cell level into both cardiomyocyte and endothelial cells. And we could clearly show that about 15% of the colony were composed of cardiac cells as well as endothelial cell markers, suggesting that at least 10 to 15% of the MSP1 progenitor were multipotent. We found also many colonies, about 40% of the cells, that were either endothelial or cardiomyocyte, but without endothelial marker, suggesting that they were unipotent progenitor of the endothelial lineage or cardiomyocyte. Another important thing that we found here in this study was, you know, it's not very convenient if you want to generalize this and allow the whole field to work actively in those progenitors to use a reporter gene that you need to put into different backgrounds. And so we thought that something that would be very useful for the field would identify cell surface markers that allow precisely to isolate the same cell as the one that we isolate using our MSP1 reporter. And we find that a combination of three monoclonal antibodies, FLIK1, PDGF-RA, and CXCR4, allow to isolate the MSP1 expressing cells and allow to enrich for cardiac cells and endothelial cells in vitro and as well as in vivo. And at the same time, then our group published this paper, the group of Gordon Keller in Canada found that the same cell surface marker can be used to isolate the same type of progenitor using human embryonic stem cell or human iPS cell, showing that this really conserved during evolution. So, you know, we propose this model of this early specification of progenitor that would arise just after the early mesoderm, and cells are marked by this three cell surface marker and would give rise to both first Herfield and second Herfield progenitor, which and that able to differentiate at the clonal level sometime in more than one cell lineage. So we don't do that ourselves, but you know the interest and the rationale and medical implication for studying you know this way of promoting cardiac differentiation would be the following. So if you can have a source of cardiomyocyte that you can work with in vitro, you can and make for example iPS model for heart congenital disease. You can do drug testing to see whether you have molecules that promote contraction or accelerate the intrinsic beat of beating contraction frequency of decreasing the beating frequency. You can look for anti-arrhythmic protein and more importantly, you may use these cells to treat patients that suffer from cardiac disease and after myocardial infarction of, or congenital or heart failure. And so this is a Nature paper in which they show for the first time that in human primate, this technique is working. And here it's a monkey in which they make a myocardial infarction and they inject cardiomyocyte derived from ES cells from from human embryonic stem cell and show that these cells here can integrate into the ventricles of this monkey and by ultrasound they could show that this zone were functional and they were electrically coupled with the rest and well vascularized. So really demonstrating the therapeutical potential of this approach to treat heart failure. So we wanted to move outside of the Petri dish and see whether all what we have found in the Petri dish was any relevant from the real life, which is embryonic development. And I had the chance to recruit Fabienne Lescroix, who was a PhD student in the laboratory of Margaret Buckingham, and who was extremely well trained into the real thing that is embryonic development and her development. And she could really push the whole lab into the in vivo part with a grad student that she worked with, Samira Shabab, and Xiong Wei, who did a lot of molecular biological experiment that I will talk to you later about. And so the key question that Fabienne and Samira wanted to investigate was the following. Can we find a common progenitor for the first and the second field. Or these first and second field arise at different time of development by sequential expression of MESP1. That was the alternative hypothesis. And the next question that we wanted to address is what I show you, you know, in vitro using this colony-forming assay, is a single MESP1 cell can differentiate into myocardium, endocardium, and smooth muscle cells, or all this cell lineage were in vivo coming from different cell lineage. And we generate for that a new transgenic mice that allow us to activate one of the four colors of a confetti reporter in the gastrulating embryo, very early during development, and look at the contribution of a single cell exiting the mesoderm. And so it was really the first time that people has labeled a single cell during gastrulation and look at their contribution during development and whether it contributes to the first and the second field. And to do that, we had to lower the dose of doxycycline, so to really activate very few cells. And so we knew that when only one single color of the confetti reporter was present in the herd. And when you are so clonal like that, you have to be patient because many of the herds are going to be completely black, completely devoid of recombining cells. So that's the principle of clonal analysis. So you need to be patient and you need to be very accurate. And what Fabien and Samirash found is when they were injecting the doxa at the very early time of gastrulation, they were preferentially labeling the left ventricle and sometimes the right ventricle, but not at all the other structure. And when they inject doxycycline at the late stage of gastrulation, they could only label the second heart field derivative, such as the outflow tract region or the different atria, but never the left ventricle. And we never found a single clone that were labeling both regions, suggesting that the first heart field progenitor and the second heart field progenitor, they are generated at different times during development from a pool of cells that both of them express MESP1. So sometimes, you know, looking at the temporality of specification is really important to find out how the emergence. And when they look for the differentiation of all these clones, another surprise arrives here. And we were really thinking that more during the early stage of development, most of the cell will be multipotent. You know, we were reasoning that more early you start, more chance you are to be multipotent, and more later you look at the phenomena, more likely you're going to look for unipotent, and there will be lineage restriction occurring over time. But it's totally the contrary that we observe here. During the early time point, actually the cells were either marking the cardiomyocyte or the endothelial cells, but never both. And that was true both from the first heart field derivative or the atria. And, and in contrast, when we look for the cells in the second heart field, there we could find clones that were cardiomyocyte positive and endothelial cells positive, so bipotent clone. And the same is true for the smooth muscle cells and the cardiomyocyte. Another cool thing that we identify in this study is the fact that there's a common progenitor between the second heart field cells, so cells of the outflow tract region of the right ventricle, and the muscles of the head. And so Fabienne, when she was in the lab of Margaret, previously found such kind of clone, but she didn't really knew when this clone would arise. And so here we could precisely identify the temporality of the emergence of this common progenitor, one that gives rise to a striated muscle fate and the other to a cardiomyocyte of the outflow tract region. And so all this data allow us to rephrase, if you wish, the how cardiogenesis occurs during embryonic development. And instead of thinking of a top of the hierarchy in which you have a progenitor that would be common for everything, we found that actually there's many types of cardiac progenitors that arise at different times during gastrulation and that will contribute to the formation of different cell lineage and different heart regions. and be even common between the myocyte of the head muscles and the cardiomyocyte. Also, this lineage tracing approach allows us to precisely tell you how much of the early mesoderm progenitor you need to build a mature herd. And we, you know, I won't explain you all the calculation. It's very kind of simple conceptually. It's simply you look what is the surface of this clone, and you average that with many other clones, and you say, okay, how many of this surface I need to build the whole surface of the herd? And it's about 250 progenitor. No, of course, the key question is, what would happen if you decrease by half this number of progenitor? Would you impair severely herd morphogenesis? Or what would happen if you double this pool of progenitor? Would that change everything? Or this system is plastic at this stage, and this year is ongoing study. In addition, as you can see here, by the shape of this clone, the different earth region grow with a very different mode of growth, if you wish. A cardiomyocyte of the left ventricle, they grow mostly what is called isotropic growth. So it means that these clones are not undergo a very strong mechanical stress, and they simply, you know, divide as a patch. Whereas, for example, the cells here of the outflow tract region, they almost a single cells that cover the whole circumference of the outflow tract. And so that it's totally anisotropic and either point toward a very special mode of cell division, which will be asymmetrical cell division, and or that the tissue is very exposed to very strong force that would curve this shape of this clone and give that. But despite this very particular mode of growth, the clonal dynamics, so how many of cells a single clone can make, is remarkably similar. And so that's very, you know, interesting. It's like they were an intrinsic program that tell the progenitor how much time they need to divide during herd development, irrespective of the force that they have been exposed to, or the particular region, or the timing of their appearance. So now we still want to go further and still understanding, you know, what are the basis, the molecular mechanism shaping this, you know, heterogeneity of progenitor and these different cells. And so we decide to perform microRNA analysis from gastrulating embryo. And initially we were pooling, you know, mice, because we need to have these two reporter. And so, you know, we decided to do microarray with less than 100 cells. And at that time, you know, we were not sure at all it will work or not. And fortunately, it works very nicely. And from biological independent replicate, the first 100-250 genes were really nicely reproduced between the two experiments. And when we plot all this microarray data here, and we isolate the early MESP1 progenitor and the late MESP1 progenitor, they're transcriptional programs are very similar in general. Nevertheless, there are some genes here that are differentially regulated between the early and the late gene, and many of these genes have a lot of sense in terms of cardiac development, because all of these genes that I highlight here were previously shown to be important for the secondary field, exactly the progenitor that arrives at E7.5. At E6.5, we still don't know much, and we are still very interested to understand, you know, some of these transcriptional regulators and how they may regulate the fate of these. We even went one step further and look at a single cell transcriptomic analysis, and here it's been done by RT-PCR. We found that the gene that were co-expressing cardiac marker and endothelial marker, these bipotent cells were only expressed exactly as we found during lineage tracing in the late time point and very literally in the early time point. So of course, we want to understand much better all this, you know, transcriptional heterogeneity. And now we collaborate with the group of Bertie Gottgens and at Cambridge University. And we have performed a single-cell RNA-seq experiment of this early and late gene and be able to cluster a little bit better all this type of lineage and understand how the knockout of MESP1, MESP2 affect this transcriptional heterogeneity at the single-cell level. And I'll present you that at another time. As I told you, when you knock out MESP1 alone, there's no major problem of cardiac differentiation, but there's a problem of cardiac structure that was suggested to arise from a problem of migration. And so the last 5 minutes of my talk, I will show you how MESP1 can regulate the migration of cardiac progenitors, and whether MESP2 can compensate for the loss of MESP1 function. And so what we have done here, we have simply cloned MESP2 in this DOX-inducible cell line and try to see whether MESP2 overexpression can do the same job than MESP1 overexpression. And here, what I show you is actually MESP1 or MESP2 has the same cardiac inductive properties as seen here by the beating embryonic body or seen here by the cardiac troponin T expression. Both MESP1 and MESP2 are equally efficient at promoting vascular differentiation as shown here by CD31 staining. But only MESP1 were very efficient at promoting the speed of progenitor migration. And how we do that, this experiment, that is done in vitro. So we plate the cells, make embryonic bodies, and removing, you know, the leaf and all the stuff that promote pluripotency, and plate the cells, and then do a simple wound scratch assay and see in how rapidly the cells fill the gap. And as you can see here, MESP1 is much more efficient than MESP2 or control cells in filling the gap. Another interesting feature that we see during this wound-leading closure in vitro is the orientation of MESP1 cells were very particular. And so the MESP1 cells were oriented in a unidirectional manner. And when you track change their position and you see how they migrate really straight, whereas the control cell or the MESP2 cell, you know, they explore the territory when they migrate. And this polarity of cell migration and unidirectionality of cell migration is seen here by the polarity of the actin cytoskeleton and the stress fiber, as well as the polarity of the Golgi, as shown here by GM130 immunostaining. So then we try to see what could be the factor that was promoted by MESP1 that MESP2 can not as potently induced as MESP1. So we did microarray, and we found two genes here, Prickle1 and RasBrP3, as two direct target genes here. Here you see that the MESP1 peak in the Prickle1 gene. And so Prickle1 is a gene involved in the planar cell polarity. And there's a major defect of gastrulation arising in the mice that are knockout for Prickle1. And RasGRP3 is a molecule that was suggested to promote ERK signaling, MAP kinase. As you know, or may not know, the directionality or the migration can be stimulated by the FGF protein, which activates the ERK signaling. So maybe, you know, the fact that RasGRP3 is overexpressed may explain the rapidity of cell migration. And so first, you know, we check whether these genes were indeed downregulated in MESP1 loss of function, and was the case both for Prickle1 and RasGRP3. And then we perform different experiments here, either by gain of function. So here, the RasGRP3, together with MESP2, can rescue the speed of migration as MESP1 overexpressing cells. And the definitive experiment comes here, with the CRISPR-Cas9 knockout of RasGRP3 in MESP1 overexpressing cells. And you can see that the MESP1 can no longer stimulate the rapidity of cell migration when you knock Raspberry Petri out. And when we knock out prickle 1 in MESP1 expressing cells, this time we not block at all the rapidity of cell migration, but we block the unidirectionality of cell migration by knockout prickle 1. And so here it's a little scheme to show you that MESP1 really coordinate cardiovascular progenitor specification and migration, and MESP1 promote oriented cell migration by promoting the expression of prickle 1 that polarize the migration and the direction of migration, and through Raspberry Pi 3 via ERK signaling that promote the speed of migration, possibly throughout FGF signaling. And so with that, I thank the people who did the work. Antoine was really the pioneer in this MESP1 work in my lab, and followed, as I told you, by Fabienne and Samira and Giuseppe, who did the work on MESP2 and cell migration, and our technician, Catherine, and a master thesis student here. And I thank also the our funders and the Fondation Bettencourt-Schoeller, who allow, and the AMBO, who allow and give a fellowship to Fabienne during our postdoctoral stay in my lab. So thank you very much for your attention, and happy to answer your questions.